We talk all the time about mental health and we never talk about mental fitness. And health and fitness are not the same thing. You can be free of depression, you know, clinical issues. You get stressed out and reactive at the slightest thing. You are mentally healthy, but you are mentally unfit. That's not because you're weak or because it's a character trait. It's just untrained. Humans will always adapt to whatever the normal behavior is. If you are always available, if you are always saying yes to meetings or responding straight away, people will expect that. If you just set some clear boundaries around it, and again, it doesn't have to be massive, people 9 times out of 10 will accept it and will start to adapt to it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the No Stress Podcast. I'm here today with Simon Jeffries, performance coach and founder of The Natural Edge. And we're going to be talking today about stress resilience and what you can do to get even stronger in this area. I'm really excited to be here with you today and to hear all about your views on stress and resilience and how we can become better in terms of how we respond to stress. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me on. Looking forward to it.
So before we get into the detail, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background. We've just been talking about it earlier as well. And you've had a really, really interesting background from being in the military all the way through to working in corporate. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'll give you the flyover. So I started off, I joined the military in my 20s, first as a Royal Marines commando. After passing out of training, I did a year or so at a unit, and then I joined a specialist branch within the Royal Marines, which worked alongside Special Forces, so it's providing signal support for them. So that gave me an insight and an exposure into that world. I then wanted to stay a part of it, so put myself on selection for Special Forces, which I passed, and then continued serving the rest of my career in Special Forces. Did 3 operational tours of combat in total, and then got to the point where I felt like I'd done everything that I'd wanted to. Was at that point where I was thinking about family, wanted more control over my time. So decided to leave and look for that next challenge, which I didn't really know what that was. Ended up getting a job in London because my partner at the time had a job there. So I thought I'd try out the corporate world. Realized very quickly that just wasn't going to be a good fit. And then that put me on the path to really figuring out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. Through many mistakes and failures of figuring that out, I realized it was following what's always been my passion, which has been mindset and performance, and how I can help other people live the life that they want, feeling in control of it on their terms. And so that's what I've been doing for the past nearly 10 years with The Natural Edge, which is my performance coaching company.
Nice. And one of your focus areas is stress resilience, thinking about all the people you work with, from CEOs, founders, people who are very senior in organizations, thinking about how they can perform at their best. What is your definition of stress resilience? What does it actually mean to you?
So it's a good question. I think so. Most of the people who come into this coaching, life looks great on paper. You know, they've got the job or running a business, usually a young family. Things look great, but, and it's always the but, you know, a classic one is stress is very high, find it hard to switch off. There's various other things, procrastination, perfectionism, but stress is always there, usually 9 times out of 10. And so stress resilience, I would say, is our ability to be in control of our stress response so that pressure doesn't unduly stress us and throw us off track. So really, it's our ability to perform through pressure and challenge as opposed to going into a stress reactive state. That means we perform at less than our best, not just at work, but how we show up at home, how we show up for ourselves. Mm. When you're not in control of your stress response, it really is a foundational pillar that can throw everything else off. So it's vital to be able to change that and take back control of it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think so much starts with the mind. The kind of mental side of things is everything. When it comes to the people that you've worked with, do they realize that they aren't stress resilient? Do they realize that there is maybe something they can do to train that muscle?
I would say it's a mix. I would say that they all recognize that they are stressed, that stress is too high. And there is some understanding of, perhaps I should be, it's the classic, I should be doing some meditation. I should look at how I'm perceiving things or thinking about it. I should be more present. It's all the classic things that we see in self-help or motivational talks, which sort of make sense, but a lot of people, either they don't really understand how to build that into their life, or they try it, but do it in a way that they don't really see any results. And so they just end up doing nothing. And I think we can go on to this. This is one of the big problems. People don't really understand how these things work and then how they train it. And train it is a key word. I would say, how many people really accept and understand that this is trainable? It's really not that many. And it's something that I think that key message is something that really needs to change.
Yeah, there's definitely something around patience or impatience, especially with a lot of people who've got lots going on, work, family life and everything else. People think meditation hasn't worked for me one day, or I'll try this particular thing, it's not working. And like you say, the training the muscle or being able to recognize that with patience, the more you do it, the stronger you'll get with it, is something that maybe people don't always keep in mind. How do you remind them of that?
So it's understanding how it works, what mechanisms we need to put in place to change that, and then how to actually do that. So I always liken all of this to physical training. So if you don't really understand how the body works and how to train it, maybe you'll see something like, oh, I'll just try and go for the odd run or some exercise here and there. You're probably not really going to see much of a result. That feels disheartening, so you don't carry on with it. And that's the reason people go to a PT. So you understand, okay, this is what these exercises do. This is how I program this for myself. This is what I eat. This is what I need to do for my recovery. And they start to follow that and see the results and see the body change. The mind's no different. So if we want to see these changes, we need to understand how the mind and body work, what the mechanisms are to facilitate the change. And then we need to know practical steps that we can put in place to change that. I always liken it to, it's a lot of people are trying to put a puzzle together and they don't even have the picture on the box and there's pieces of the puzzle missing. So what I do when I work with people is, here's the picture, here's the puzzle pieces, and they're all numbered. Just follow the steps. So that's really what we need to facilitate that change.
Yeah, so take away the decision-making, like you're giving them the full kind of process that they need to go through to do that. And I think that really helps, because if people don't have time to think for it for themselves, you're just giving them that kind of easy path to follow. So if we're talking about some of your clients, people you work with, when you talk to them and you're actually thinking about what actually happens with your body and what happens to your body under stress, how would you describe that to them?
I always talk about, I think a good analogy, I don't know if it's an analogy or a metaphor for stress is, imagine being in your house and the smoke alarm is just blaring. So we know how that feels, the tension in the body, that noise. It feels like all you want is for it to stop, for that feeling to go away. And imagine if that smoke alarm is going off all of the time. So obviously a smoke alarm is only designed to go off if there is natural fire. If every time you make some toast, that goes off, that's a problem. That is essentially our stress response. Most people's, the problem isn't the alarm. The problem is the setting is too sensitive. And so that's the same for us in our bodies. Most people are getting triggered too easily by daily events or what's happening in their life, and they're not able to control it. If we look at that on a spectrum, so going back to the military, special forces, or if you look at first responders or even athletes on world stages, they have trained themselves to go up against or be under extreme pressure and not feel not stressed to a point where it inhibits their ability to perform. The reason they have that is because they've trained it. And yet in life, what happens is we train for work, we learn our skills, we gain the experience, but we don't actually train our performance, the performance side. And that's what we need to do. I kind of break it down into, we need to be able to regulate the body, the nervous system. We need to take control of our mindset, and then we need to put the structures and habits in place. So we can think of that as three pillars. If any one of those is suboptimal or weak, the whole system crashes. And so when we talk about stress, we really need to look at those three sides of the tripod. We need to look at, what are we doing daily to regulate our body? What are we doing to take control of our thoughts and emotions, and what structures do we have in place? And the combination of those together, depending on what you are or aren't doing, is really going to decide how well you cope with pressure and challenges and respond to things versus reacting, becoming stressed.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that, again, when people have got a lot going on, they're busy, they don't have time to think about that. They aren't even aware that they're having these kind of challenges and alerts and things going off in your body telling you that you need to slow down and think about doing things differently. Thinking about your background in the military, there must be loads of myths around resilience, or things that people like me who haven't been in the military would be thinking everyone in the military is really resilient and they just are the way they are because of the jobs that they do. What is one of the biggest misconceptions or myths around resilience that you've found?
I think it's exactly what you said there, that it's just must be the way that you are, as opposed to you make a decision to join the military, but you don't walk into a careers office, join and walk out the other side ready to deploy to a combat zone. You join the military and then you go through a very structured, progressive training process that builds, yeah, the physical fitness and resilience, but also the mental resilience, the mental models, changing the way that you think about things. And through that process, that is how you're then able to go and deal with extreme pressure and put into situations that seem from the outside like it's superhuman. It's just the result of a process. And I think that's the biggest thing. That is the biggest myth, that, you know, those people must be built differently. It's a trainable process. You know, the same applies to athletes or the police or any of these people or jobs that require you to be in extreme situations.
Nice. That's promising for everyone listening, I think. So what do you need to do to open your mind to accept that it is trainable, and I guess moving into a growth mindset rather than a fixed mindset, thinking I can become more resilient? What would you advise to people?
I think for making that switch, it's simply stepping back. I mean, you're right, it's a growth or a fixed mindset. It's really a decision. Like, the body that I have today, if I tomorrow went out and changed what I eat, the amount of exercise I was doing, daily steps, nutrition, hydration, would my body change? I think pretty much everyone would answer yes. So if we apply that same to our mindset, if I suddenly started having awareness around, okay, what is it that triggers me? What is the process that causes those thoughts to come up? Okay, if I start to retrain those patterns with conscious self-talk, with awareness, with some regulation practices, do I think that would change? Again, hopefully the answer is yes. Same with our structures and habits. So it's just the acceptance that how we are right now doesn't have to be how we are going forwards into the future. There's a huge amount that we can change. Yeah. I think just by accepting that and starting to see these things as trainable, and I would follow that on with, it's never massive changes. One of the hardest things for me to get across on this journey, you know, with coaching two people in the beginning, is that there is no secret out there. You're not missing some big hack. It doesn't exist. Whenever you listen to any perceived high performer in any arena talk, it always comes back to consistently getting the basics in place. And so the acceptance of, one, it's trainable, and two, it is the small changes you make day to day that compound to add up to essentially dictate who you are and how your life feels. And then it's just understanding the path and following it.
Mm. And you said something earlier, which I guess ties into that quite nicely, when you were talking about the fact that it is small changes, it is you making a decision that you want to do something differently. How do you persuade people who say, this is just life happening to me, I can't do anything about it? I think earlier you said something about it's your perception as well, how you respond to the things coming at you. We do get a lot of people who would say, it's just life happening to me.
When someone has that mindset, it's hard to change it, bar like an education process around it. I mean, let's just take, for example, most people, they wake up, the first thing they do is looking at the phone. It's whether that's social media, news, emails, messages, they're straight into reacting to the world. Then it's rushing through the morning, straight into work. It's that constant reactivity. And then it's the same in the evening. The last thing they're doing is on screens, looking at emails, messages, again, reactivity, going to bed, and then it's just to repeat. Even if you just change that to, right, for the first 30 minutes after waking before bed, no screens, doing something intentional. That could be going for a walk. That could be doing some exercise. It could be, I'm just going to be present with my family. But starting the day in an intentional way and not triggering the brain immediately, essentially with those external, usually stressful inputs. That sounds like a really small, simple check, and it is. And a lot of people will look at that and go, ah, that's not really going to make a difference. Yeah, it will. If you do that for a week and tell me you don't feel a difference, and this is part of the big problem, people looking at it go, that's too small to make a difference. Okay, it's not going to change your life. It will start to make a difference, but that's just one example of a small change. If we stack all of those simple changes together, i.e. how you go through your day, do you have boundaries set? Do you have intentional times to check emails or messages? Are they totally, or are they just constantly pinging in? Talk about fragmenting your focus. You're going to find it very hard to ever feel focused and in control if you're just constantly reacting to things. Mm. It's a very good way, waking up straight into screens, having no boundaries, having notifications, messages on the time or on all the time, task switching is a very good way to feel overwhelmed and stressed and reactive continuously and not in control. Small changes around that. And again, it comes back to, so, okay, what's the mindset? A lot of people struggle with boundaries. They don't say no. They just slip into that people-pleasing. So it's a mindset issue. And then the structure, how's the day set up? Is it intentional blocks? And how you're structuring your workday, which is a structural issue. So it's, we can always break it down into these kind of tiers and look at what are the small changes that we need to make. And as we do that, those scales start to tip from feeling stressed, reactive, and overwhelmed to intentional, calm, and in control.
Brilliant. And a lot of that is, like you say, it's taking more control over how you're doing things, being more aware in the first place, and then making those small changes, those right decisions, right? Brilliant. So I would love to hear from you on what you do to hone your stress resilience. Like, what's your routine every day, or what are some of the practices that you do?
So again, I will break it out, always break it down to, when I talk about these three pillars and what we're talking about here, is I really like to think of it as an operating system. So all of us already have an operating system, as in the way that we go about life. And you could take that from sort of, you know, zero to exceptional. And we all sit somewhere on that. For most of us, we're not intentional with that. It's just a series of habits and our mindsets that's formed over our life as a result of the experiences that we've had. And we don't really stop and ask, well, why is it that I think in this way or do these things or am in these environments? And then starting to be more intentional with it. It really is that switch from feeling like life is just happening to you and you're trying to keep up versus, no, I'm in control of my life and driving it forwards. And it really is these small switches. So for myself, looking at those pillars, so on the regulating your nervous system, it really is all the basics around what is it as humans that make us feel good. So for me, it's in the morning, I don't have that reactive input. It's usually waking up. First thing is having some water and then moving, whether that is going for a jog or usually just taking the dog for a walk. Now, actually, it's combined because I've just recently had a baby daughter. It's myself, the dog, and my 4-month-old daughter going out for a walk, then moving into the day. In fact, I'll come into the structure part. I'll stick on the regulating your state. So starting with that intention, so simple things, make sure I'm hydrated through the day with my food. Not perfect, but 80% of the time, trying to eat good whole food, not full of sugar and loaded with caffeine, limiting alcohol intake, particularly in the week, because the effect on sleep. With my sleep, trying to make sure that is good. So having a cool, dark room, using earplugs, eye mask, whatever that looks like, and making sure that I'm getting out, at least even if it's just for 10 minutes, taking a break from the desk, from the screens, again, getting outside, a bit of movement, a bit of natural light. Again, it's not big, crazy things. It's the small basics done repeatedly. So that's kind of on the regulated state. And then on the mindset side, it's that self-awareness piece. I'm aware of what are the things that I'm saying to myself when I'm looking at a situation. If things are going wrong, how am I perceiving that? Am I telling myself, oh, you've messed up again, it's all going to go wrong, it's not working? Or is it, okay, this hasn't worked the way I want, what can I learn from this? What do I need to change? Okay, I'm going to put that into practice. And it's not linking that to my self-worth. A lot of people link making a mistake to who they are, as opposed to, this is just something I've done, I can learn from that and change it going forwards. So it's just being aware of what I say to myself. And then if that's starting to slip into a negative narrative or thought, it's stopping that, bringing it back, reframing it, or using some kind of self-talk to put me back in control of that that headspace. And then the last piece with the structure, for me, I intentionally block meetings wherever I can into usually the afternoon, and try and load them around the same time on the same days. I keep the morning free for creative work in that space. You know, no, there's no notifications, the diary's blocked. And I set that boundaries both with my team and with clients. Then for a lot of the coaching I do, so messaging or calls, again, it's intentionally putting that into blocks. So it's just structuring the day in a way where wherever I can, I'm intentional with it. Yes, there are going to be times when you need to react to emails or things coming in. But if you try and put that where you can into the same block and recognize this is going to be a reactive period, that's absolutely fine. I'll deal with it. And so what I'm really talking about here for myself and what I would do for the clients is just getting the basics in place across those three pillars. And when you do that, most of the time, you feel in control.
It's something that I think also, you've got your own business, I've got my own business, we can do more of that as well. And I think your routine sounds very similar to elements of mine. For people who maybe work in organizations, so many people you work with and so many people I work with have the situation where they're being pulled in different directions, meetings are happening back to back, and there are lots of studies around that as well and how it impacts your stress levels. What advice would you give to them about how they can respond in the moment to not being in control?
So I think there's a couple of things with this. One, people have a lot more freedom than they think to make changes. So for example, I worked with a woman once, Anna, who she ran a legal team in a massive company. She started to implement some of these changes for herself and then she brought into work. So she sent a memo out to the entire company and said, the legal team will not respond to anything before 11 a.m. unless it is absolutely, you know, red alert critical. The difference that made to that team's productivity by setting that boundary and just giving them that space was massive. Humans will always adapt to whatever the normal behavior is. If you are always available, if you are always saying yes to meetings or responding straight away, people will expect that. If you just set some clear boundaries around it, and again, it doesn't have to be massive, that could be a kind of simple change, then people 9 times out of 10 will accept it and will start to adapt to it. So it's really looking at what pattern have I fallen into that is quite unconscious and I've just let happen and started to take control of that process. So the first point is we've usually got more freedom to make changes than we sometimes think we have. But yes, there are times when that is out of our control. With that, again, it's just a perception. It's looking at those situations within, you know, whatever it is in life. Okay, what can I control here? And what do I just need to let go of and accept? A lot of stress comes from when you're trying to control things that are not yours to control. If you're in a team where you can't set that meeting cadence, then continually fighting and having that internal negative narrative around it is just going to feel stressful, as opposed to, okay, this is the situation. This is what I've got to work with. Okay, good. That is the situation. I do what I can within it. But it's really the acceptance piece. If you're continually fighting it, it causes problems. You almost need to look at your pathways. It's like, okay, what can I do about this? Am I going to go and have a conversation? Can I suggest that we maybe make some changes based on this? Yes or no? Depending on the answer, yes, okay, I'll go and have it. No, okay, well, I need to accept it or I need to look at making changes. So it's control what you can and then the acceptance piece.
Yeah, I love that acceptance statement because a lot of people can't accept that it is simple as saying, I accept it. And you're right, there's so much energy, mental energy that gets taken from worrying about things that we can't do anything about. There's a good YouTube with the monk and he says, I'm going to give you, you've probably seen this. He says, I'm going to give you a very simple piece of advice that will help your whole life. And he says, can you do something about it? No, then why worry? And if you can do something about it, then why worry? So the worry is the thing that makes people more stressed than anything else, right?
Yeah. I mean, your point there is that it sounds very simple, but the trouble is people get trapped in their thoughts and emotions. So they just get into that spiral and they're able to step out. But that simple mental exercise, and really, so if I take it back to the military, when you're in combat or extreme situations, that's essentially what you're doing. That ability to like stop, okay, take that tactical pause, look around, what can I control here? What can I not? Okay, these are the options. Okay, pick this and go. The same in daily life. If you feel your life self going into that spiral about stop, step back, take that breath, calm the nervous system down. Okay, what can I control here? What are the options? These are the two pathways. Yes or no. Okay, I'll take this or oh, this is an acceptance piece. Just that ability to step out of the thoughts and emotions, break it down, and then choose the pathways. Again, you will start to feel in control, even if that control is an acceptance of something out of your control. But you have to train that. Let's bring this back to the core point of that is not something you can just do or not do. The reason the military can do that is because you've been through the process where they progressively put you, starting off in very easy situations to harder and harder and more stressful. But that simple, like a strategic, taking a tactical pause and assessing the situation is just something that you learn. It's just a trained skill. You're building a mental model to be able to do that. We can build those mental models in life, but only if you do that every time. From a simple thing like in the morning, the kids are playing up, you can do that. To on the commute, someone pushes in front of you, you can do that. To getting into work, a meeting comes in and you don't want, you can do that. At every single point, this is the great thing about mindset training. You have to do the reps. That is my mantra. If you are not doing the reps, this will not change. In the same way you do the reps with a physical body, if you start doing that with your mindset, you will see massive changes and it will fundamentally change your life.
Brilliant. And I think the biggest thing is people don't see it. They don't see the mind. So like the physical body, you think I can grow it and I can see that I've transformed in some way. They don't see the mind, so they don't think that it's possible.
But it's also not spoken. It's just not spoken about. I think, so we talk all the time about mental health and we never talk about mental fitness. And health and fitness are not the same thing. So if you think about physical health, you can be free of disease, free of injury, but you can't run 5K, you can't do a single pull-up. You're physically healthy, but you are physically unfit. Same with mental health and mental fitness. You can be free of depression, you know, clinical issues, but you get stressed out and reactive at the slightest thing. You worry all the time. You aren't able to control your thoughts and emotions when certain events happen. You are mentally healthy, but you are mentally unfit. Mm. But that's not because you're weak or because it's a character trait. It's just untrained. It's trained or untrained. That's it. And I think just starting to see it in those terms, am I trained or untrained? Okay. Am I happy with where I am in how in whatever area of life? No. Okay. Well, what am I going to put in place to start training that?
And knowing that you can train it, everyone can train it.
Everyone.
It's not just people from the military.
Yeah.
For my own curiosity, before we go on to, we'd love to know some tips from you that you would share with everyone about what they can do. What was the most memorable training that you did in the military that helped to build your mental resilience? I don't know if it was a particular task or exercise you had to do.
It's only really the military and elite sport and say the police or first responders that train performance, i.e. what we're talking about here, our mindset, how we show up. Outside of that, in life, we don't really train that at all. The difference between, say, the sport and the military and kind of the police is in elite sport, you have sports psychologists, performance psychologists who overtly train this with athletes. In the military and things like the police, it's more sort of by osmosis of being in that environment. So the mental models are built through, you know, your SOPs, your kind of tactics and strategies of how you break down the battlefield, of the orders process, of how you start to look at things. Even simple, so I'll give an example of in basic military training for the Royal Marines, whenever you're doing any kind of physical exercise, and a lot of time you're getting absolutely thrashed and all you want to do is like double over, put your hands on your knees, lie on the floor. You have to stand up straight. You're allowed to lightly rest your hands on the top of your chest. That's it. Not hands on your head, not on your hips. And you're told all the time, get a grip. So if they see you bending, it's like, get a grip of yourself. It's a kind of assertive phrase to take control of your body when you feel like giving into the body, essentially. And what that's teaching you is to stay in control, which is that essential skill. So when you're in combat, that ability to do that when you are fatigued and exhausted, to take control of the body and calm yourself, is a life-saving skill. And so it's an example of people kind of get that in your heads, and it's something I still use now. It's a piece of assertive self-talk that you can use with yourself when you feel like your thoughts and emotions go like getting the better of you and taking down a path that you don't want. So like, right, okay, take a breath, get a grip. And it just snaps you back in control. So it's just an example of things like that. That is essentially building a mental model for you to use to retake control of your body, of your thoughts and emotions under pressure. So it's not really one thing. That's just one example, but there's lots of those examples. And because you're immersed in that world 24/7, it rebuilds. So it builds the body, but it builds this mindset as well. But again, we can use this in life. So when, for myself, when I'm coaching clients, just having a playbook of self-talk phrases that work for you, and some of them need to be assertive, like get a grip. Others need to be more forgiving. It's like, it's okay. This has gone wrong. That's fine. Doesn't need to be perfect. I just need consistency overall. So some forgiveness and the ability to move forwards. Being able to understand yourself and what you require in any moment, depending on the trigger, is just a skill you train and build over time. But the more you can do that, it doesn't matter what happens. None of us are perfect. We're all going to have those moments where we snap or go down a path we don't want. What I always say is the more you train this is, the less negative states you slip into. So the more it takes to actually trigger you. When it does happen, you're much able to deal with it and sit with it and not be derailed. You can still take action and you can pull yourself out faster. And that's just a result of consistently training it. So it's, I wouldn't say it's one thing, it's a combination, and the same applies in life.
Brilliant. I love the idea of the playbook of self-talk phrases as well, but also that you said to have the kind of harder ones where you're saying get a grip, but also the ones that are saying it's okay, I've made a mistake, I can move on from this. And I think goes back to what we were saying around perceptions. If we start panicking or feeling like the world's caved in when we've done something or things aren't going to plan, it's all that kind of energy goes towards ruminating and getting stressed rather than thinking, how can I move forward? So love that idea. So just in terms of, I think our listeners would love to hear more from you about very quick tips or immediately things that they can kind of do immediately to start to build their own stress fitness or resilience. What would you suggest?
So a very simple drill that you can put in place, which is a combination of taking control of the body to then take control of the mind. So taking a couple of deep breaths is the easiest way to tap into the parasympathetic nervous system, take us out of that fight or flight mode, which then gives us the space to take control of our mind. So stop, take a few deep breaths, and then use that playbook of self-talk. So it could be, okay, what do I need to control here? What do I need to accept? Or it might be, good, now what? So it's another phrase that we sometimes use that comes from an ex-Navy SEAL. Good is, it flips the script to an acceptance of the situation. Now what takes us from catastrophizing to problem solving? Okay, what am I going to do? So stop, take a breath, good, now what? So that could be the kids are playing up, you've just spilt coffee on your laptop, you're going to be late for a meeting, whatever it happens to be, you feel the tension, you feel the anxiety, you feel the negative thoughts coming on. Stop, step back, take a breath, good, now what? Or what can I control here? So it's a very simple practice, but again, this will only work if you practice it consistently. If you don't think about this again until something quite acute happens and you feel triggered, it's going to be really hard to call upon it. Whereas if you just start building it into your day, and a very simple thing to do is just stick a post-it note on the fridge, put a note on your laptop, put something to keep this in the top of your consciousness so that you can start consistently practicing it. What that will do is it will start to change your default mindset so that when a trigger happens, instead of feeling tense, stressed, anxious, catastrophizing, you stop, take a breath, and take control. So that's the important part, is we can't just do this now and again, just like physical training. We have to try and build that into a daily practice so that it just becomes something you do.
Brilliant. I find mindfulness and doing meditation, centering, really helps with that, stopping from jumping from action to reaction. But all the things you've shared are really powerful, and they're not rocket science in terms of, they're not things that people can't do. People can access becoming more self-aware, breathing more effectively, asking themselves that really great, I love that phrase, good, now what? It's things that are immediately easy and accessible for people to do. Do you think there's anything that could stop people from implementing some of these techniques and tips?
The only thing that stops you is if you, as we went back to the beginning, so if you don't believe that it's going to make a difference, if you don't believe it's trainable, then you're probably not going to do it and you're not going to see the difference. It is, all of this stuff is simple, but it's not easy in the sense that people often don't know how to tie it all together. And I think the biggest thing that's missing in the space is seeing it as something practical, a practical skill set we have to train. I think that is the biggest problem in the self-help space. It's very passive. So the physical space, it's active, as in we all accept if we want to see a change, I have to eat different foods, I have to move my body, I have to do exercise. And yet in the self-help, mental health, mental fitness space, it's, I will listen to a podcast, I will read a book, I will passively consume information. And then I wonder why complex neural pathways, behavior patterns, thought patterns that have been built up for years and years aren't changing. Funny old thing, they're not going to change unless we have a way to practically implement some of the things that we've been talking about. And then those pathways will change. The thoughts and how we see ourselves and how we see the world will start to change.
So, Simon, how would you recommend that people start tracking their stress resilience, knowing that it's improving over time, just to give them that kind of milestone to know that they are actually going in the right direction?
A very simple thing that anyone could do right now, and a good use of AI, is just take the three pillars. So take your nervous system, the body, take your mindset, your thought patterns, and take your structure, routines, and habits, and put a prompt into something like ChatGPT and say, these are three pillars that are going to build my resilience, my mindset, my operating system. What are the key basic actions within each of these that are going to help with this? And then create a very simple breakdown of some actions that I could take each day for it, and then a tracking sheet for it.
Oh, nice.
So that straight away will just give you a list of actions that you can take that you can actually start to tick off and track, in the same way I'm going for a walk or going to the gym and ticking off the exercises that I'm doing. Even the act of doing that, you will start to see a difference, because you're starting to become consciously aware and intentional about these things. So yeah, it's just one simple way you could do that today.
Brilliant. Because I think the intangible nature of our minds make it hard for people to actually feel like they are progressing. So the daily tracking works really well. And for the people who are impatient, thinking this isn't working, I'm trying to build my stress resilience, I can't see my stress fitness becoming better. How long, and I know you may not have an answer to this, how long do you think people need to give it a go before they start seeing results?
Just through the experience of working with people over the last 10 years, when you get this right, you will see a change in week one. And then for starting to see bigger changes, I had a guy who came in recently who was on the point of going back onto anxiety meds. 3 months later, nothing had changed. Same boss, same job, same pressures with the family. His stress was back down to almost non-existent. And it was just the process of putting the basics in place, essentially, that we're speaking about here. So small changes stacked up and done consistently can have a massive, massive impact, and it doesn't have to take a huge amount of time. Like anything, the more that you do with this, same with physical training, the bigger and faster you're going to see results. So the more that you commit to it, the faster the results you'll see.
Brilliant. And trusting the process, I guess.
Trusting the process.
Yeah. And one more question I had, Simon, was when do you think people should start on their stress resilience journey? Is it something that you should do when you realise things aren't going well in life or work, or something that kids should be taught at school? What do you think?
So yeah, as young as possible. And one of the hard parts with this, and so when people, most people are coming to my coaching sort of in their 40s or around that kind of age. We haven't gone into this because it's the deeper side, but for every one of us, you will always default to how you see yourself and how you see the world. So your identity, your belief system, which has essentially been built since the day that you were born, when you or we as a person interacts with the world, that elicits your thoughts and emotions and then your behaviors. Most people have no understanding of what their belief set and what really that identity is. Until you understand that and start to change some of the negative patterns there, it's very hard to see those changes day to day. So a good example of this, we can all see it in practice, is we know we shouldn't snap at our kids and lose our patience. We know that we should do the work and not go on YouTube. We know we should eat the apple and not the cake. We logically and consciously know what we should be doing, and yet we don't time and time again. The reason is because you are running nearly probably 80, 90% of your life on unconscious processes. Like, you have no awareness of them. And that comes from that belief system. This is the kind of harder part, the deeper work that also needs to be done to really see that long-term change. That being said, the earlier you can start, so the younger we are, particularly with, you know, let's take fixed versus growth mindset. And something very simple with kids is so understanding the difference, which is really that effort and process is that path to not only finding the success, but really that contentment and happiness as well. You know, a great experiment around this, which brings it to life, is, you know, how we even speak to our children. So two groups of children were given puzzles to complete. One group was praised for effort and how hard they tried, and the other were praised for how well they did, their intelligence. What happened is, as the puzzles got progressively harder, the kids who were praised for their intelligence and doing well gave up far quicker, because the way they saw it was, well, I'm not able to do this straight away, and so what's the point? I've hit my ceiling. There's no point trying harder. And also, they'd linked praise with their self-worth, so they didn't want to lose that. Whereas the kids who were praised with effort and trying kept going far longer. What's interesting is when the kids were asked to write letters to another school to explain what they'd been doing, the kids who'd been praised again for that intelligence and the success were far more likely to lie about how well that they'd done. And so that fixed mindset is really, you perceive the results you get as who you are and your self-worth. And that has a massive impact on how many risks you're willing to take, willing to make mistakes, which are necessary to learn and to improve, the opportunities that you're willing to put yourself forward, totally shapes your entire life. And so even starting to educate kids on a fixed versus the growth mindset, and that it's about our effort, and that mistakes and failures are not bad, that they're part of the process and a natural part of achieving what we want, can totally change the not only the trajectory of someone's life, but actually how they feel about it. Because the trouble with that fixed mindset is, you can be finding success, but never feel satisfied, never feel content, never feel good enough. Massively impacts how you experience life. And so the earlier, I think, you know, particularly things, if we have awareness as parents and we build that awareness in our kids, it's going to make a huge difference. The same goes with, I know we all kind of know it, around health, like what we're eating, movement, daily light, our screen time, and how that affects our nervous system, our body, which then has a knock-on effect. It's the education and awareness around it. If we start to know these things, then we can start to make better choices, hopefully, around it. So, long way of saying, the younger that we start that education process, the better.
Yeah. So because otherwise it's deeply ingrained and hard to change.
Exactly.
Right? Back to what you're saying, that study is a fantastic one. The identity as well. And I guess thinking about even stress, a lot of people just define themselves as being a stressed person, and that can be hard to change later as well. So the earlier, like you say, the better it is to kind of unwire those ways of thinking. Simon, thank you so much for joining us today on the No Stress podcast. I think you've given us so much useful information, tips, advice, and just giving our audience different ways to think about how they think about stress. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. Pleasure.
So if you would like to find out more about Simon, you can visit his website, The Natural Edge, or check out the show notes for the links to his Instagram and all other social media. But thank you so much for joining us today as well. If there are any other topics around stress and how you can build your stress fitness, then please get in touch with us, as we'd love to hear from you as well.